This is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the arguments in part. No, we fought an entire goddamn war. States' right to do what?
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution
will not show you pictures of Nixon, October 18th, and you're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. On today's show, we'll have Razia Ahmed and myself talking with Ali about the floodings that are happening in Pakistan and around the Sindh area. Then, I was down this past Saturday at the Occupy Peoria March Rally and General Assembly. I'll be talking more about that later and how Occupy Peoria came about and what the people in Peoria have to do to keep it going, and what it means for our local area and this country. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal and prepare to be radicalized. Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. This past week I spoke with Ali Chana, who lives in the province Sindh in Pakistan and is a journalist. Razia Ahmed got me in contact with him due to the floodings that were happening in that area, and Ali played more of a position of a humanitarian and went to the flooded areas and talked to the victims of the flooding.
Last year I was working with WORT, if you have heard about that.
Yeah, in Madison?
In Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, you said did you talk to them or you were working with them there?
Yeah, I'm in touch with them. I talked to them, but last year I worked with them when I was there.
Oh, I
For 2-3 months.
Yeah, this show kind of started because I was going up to Madison, Wisconsin during the when they were occupying the Capitol building.
Yeah, and I was there.
Oh yeah, and so was I. I was covering it, and I was there from a little late February to early March, and I've gone up there back and forth from time to time and have done some work, cooperated with WORT, and they've let me use their studio, so that's, wow, didn't know I was going to be talking to someone that's from Pakistan and then actually was there occupying the Capitol building, so
yeah.
That's great to hear that you've done stuff with WORT.
Yeah.
Just wanted to kind of hear your story, what's happening now, where you're at. I'm guessing this is in regards to the floods.
We have to point out what people need because of the rain, because of their displacement and They are suffering because of diseases and also shelter, these things. So last few weeks, I visited the places. Almost 8 districts of Sindh are affected in the rain. So it has caused great distress to its population, and this is a second natural disaster after the last year's flood. And it caused destruction to houses, government buildings, schools, colleges, public infrastructure, and most important, it left the crops totally dead in the agricultural areas. And it has been very disastrous. But the interesting thing is that people are continuously suffering due to homelessness and without shelter and starvation and other fatal diseases such as fever, malaria, diarrhea, and other dangerous skin waterborne diseases. And there are many reports that people have lost their lives, and also livestock, animals have lost their lives too. I went to different districts of Sindh. The most affected districts are Badin, Tatto, Tharparkar, Umarkot, Mirpur Khas, Kherpur, Sangar, Chandwalayar, and Nawabshah. Now they have changed the name, Shahid Benazir Abad. So in those districts, people have left their homes, villages, towns to move for other safe places to get temporary shelter so that they can survive. The harsh situation forced them to live in tents, camps, and empty school and college and office buildings. Most of them are living beneath the open sky, on the grounds or roads. I have seen with my own eyes while visiting these places, and I can share with you the pictures if it is easier to share. I think Razia has seen the pictures. I have shared with her on Facebook.
Yeah, I've seen them, and they remind me of my trip. When I last year I went there, and this is how it was. The villages had were sitting outside the village, and they had, you know, there was water standing around the houses, and it's a similar situation here too.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures right now.
You can. So the most important thing is also the transport. You know, people are stuck at different places, like in little towns, disconnected from the cities, and transport and communication is also affected in those areas. So many areas are still inaccessible, and thousands are still stuck there. So these people need help. First of all, they need to be evacuated, and the second need is they need temporary shelter, like tents or the tents, because their houses are totally collapsed, and it will take time to build new house for them. And there is still water where they are living. And the third need is food. They also need to feed their children, their families, and other people who are being affected by the rain.
What's the water situation like for drinkable water?
Yeah, the drinkable water is worse. It's worse. They are suffering, and they are drinking the same water as everyone is drinking there. The water is not drinkable, and wells and underground water is also affected because of the stored water in the poles, are and many waterborne diseases have affected the people too. hand pumps. There's no other source. They are drinking water from the wells, hand pumps, and that's not safe. That's also affected water. It has germs harmful to the health, and people are getting so many diseases. You can see the pictures that I have shared with you on Facebook, and people have skin diseases.
Yeah, I see that.
Can you see them?
Yeah, the one with the individual's hands and feet.
Yeah, so these are waterborne diseases, either by drinking or by washing their hands or their face. So the water problem is a big problem, and for the on the Facebook or looking at the pictures, but if you see by yourself in person, you will see there's a lot of destruction, and they need a lot of help, not just from government but from the other communities. And people are working there voluntarily, organizations are working there. They have made little bit change. They have evacuated people, they have provided them volunteer doctors for their relief, or they have provided them the food, but they still need help. They are still stuck in the situation. And now the main concern is winter. It's the cold weather is coming. After living in the tents, they will need the warm blankets, or so that they can save their little kids from cold.
And,
it will take time. It will take months to recover, I think, as the process is going too slow.
Ali, when did the flood start?
I think in August. It started
in August.
Yeah.
So it's been a couple of months. And is the situation getting, the flooding, the rain getting less, or are you still expecting more rains?
No. There's no more rain, but the water that is accumulated because of the rain, it is in the big quantity. It's a lot of water. They need time to take it out of the fields and out of the homes. It is taking time, but the rains are stopped. There's no more rain.
There is no drainage system there?
Actually, you know, Radia, the drainage system in Pakistan, even in the big cities, when it rains for 1 hour, the water,
I know.
There's like it's flooding.
Yeah, I see in one picture there's like sandbags lined up, and looks like flood of water just going down into looks like a.
There are NGOs who are really working for these people, helping them. But there are other NGOs too who are making business. Like just for the proof, just for showing that they have visited the places and they have provided the facilities to people, they install their board, their name of their organization, and talk to people and give them a food card that they have provided food, they have provided tents or medicine to these people. They show this in their record, official record. But when we visited these places, we talked to people, and they said they came, people from those NGOs, they came and they installed their boards, their nameplates, and gave us these cards, the cards of food received and tent received and medicines we provided, and they provided nothing. They came, visited, and they went back. And
seeing that's why I do not trust the organizations in general. That's why it's so important, if you know some individual you trust like you, then it's better to give money to these people who go and talk to them and find out what their needs are and then try to do something about it.
Yeah, the people who need something, they don't have direct interaction with international community. This is like we play the middle role. We communicate with international community, with you, and we convey their message. Then this is our responsibility to respect your trust and what you think about the people. people who you trust.
So
can you see this picture? Let me...
Yeah, I see the one where he's sitting down across from the woman, talking to her. So basically, the people's trust in the area is it pretty shaky right now, or...
Yeah, it's still now, yeah. They still need facilities to get out of this situation.
You know, when I went the first time in Sadhulanapur, there's a village in near Shikarpur, and people, you know, talked and they kept saying, oh, people come and take pictures and go away and never come back. And, you know, when the second time I went with the quilts and they were so ecstatic, they said, you came back, you know, most people don't come back. So it's true. People go, especially take one of the two representatives of the organization like, and take pictures and then that's it. They never come back. So when you go back, they will be very happy, I'm sure, with some supplies, hopefully.
They were talking like, will you just write our names and then never come back? We said, no, we will convey your message. We have written your problems and we have, this is our responsibility to convey whatever your concerns are and then try to provide you the resources or your needs. Otherwise, there will be no difference between us and the people who are making business.
Okay, let me ask you something about how, if people from here want to help. Kathy Atley told me that you are trying to establish an international NGO that we could donate, make donations, and then, you know, then you'll help them. But what I am wondering about or worrying about, that may take a long time. In the meantime, is there another way we could help you, even though we may not get a tax deduction? Some of us may not care about wait for, like, I do not know, and people are suffering now, and the winter is coming, so we need to move.
Yeah, so for that, the problem, the solution of that problem is, we have an NGO. I'm the Secretary General of that NGO, New Horizons Social Development Foundation. You can see on my Facebook.
I saw it.
Yeah. So we can work all over the Sindh, not in Pakistan. We have been given permission to work voluntarily or give social services to the people of Sindh. So you can provide us the resources, and I have a report that we visited the places. I have written how many people need food and how many families need tents and how many people need seeds and fertilizer too, because rain has affected badly to the agriculture areas of these places. And the people who are just farmers, they work in their fields and they produce food for their families, but the water is still prevails in their agricultural lands. So there are people who need seeds, there are people who need food for the temporary survival, and there are people who need tents. So I have written these facts and figures. I can forward you later after this interview.
What's the...
And you can...
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
What's the main crop that's grown there for their livelihood?
Yeah, they produce wheat, rice, and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And we also met the people who produce cotton. And they are the business person. And we just have to think about the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers who have like the one square of the land, they produce food for themselves and they produce wheat and rice so that they can feed their families.
Mm-hmm.
So we gathered the facts and number of those people who are just farmers and they will produce food for themselves.
If you'd like to donate to the victims of the flooding in Pakistan, you can contact Razia Ahmed, 309-868-4256. And she said if you donate $100, she'll match it with another $100. FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. On September 17th, a few people from all around who were tired of the system that has broken them down, the corporate greed and the inequality which has left them and many others in this country near poverty, jobless, in debt, homeless, or uncertain of the future, arrived to Zuccotti Park on September 17th, after having seen an ad from Canadian magazine Adbusters calling for the occupation on Wall Street. But Adbuster would not be a part of this organizing. No one person would, except for those who met each other that day on Wall Street. From there, the occupation quickly grew, and after holding the park each night and building a community with its own culture, those people marched, they demonstrated, and were arrested. The media almost entirely ignored this, until the NYPD started macing and batoning people, which led to the infamous videos of women being kettled, then maced for peacefully protesting, or another woman being dragged by her hair by an NYPD officer, or the many others who were slammed to the pavement and arrested for exercising their right to peacefully assemble. As time went on, and after 700 protesters were arrested, among thousands who were marching to take the Brooklyn Bridge and blocking traffic, media started paying a little attention. Then other cities started their own occupations, one in Chicago, Atlanta, Boston, and the numbers grew. By October, as many as 60 major cities and 600 communities were doing their own occupations, marches in solidarity, and general assemblies. It was by this time people in Peoria started to get something going. A few people who were unaware of each other at first, created two different Facebook groups asking Peoria people to get ready for an Occupy Peoria. Matthew Whitby and Bradley Action Committee had already started posting on Facebook about doing an Occupy Peoria. Matthew and a few of his friends started the Occupy Peoria Facebook group soon after witnessing what was going on at Wall Street and the protests that were happening there. He felt that something needed to happen here in Peoria, and fast.
And we said, hey, you know, we kind of support what's going on down there. We need to start something. We need to be the first ones on it. We need to jump on this because we knew it was going to grow and it was going to be big. So, you know, we started the pages. You know, we just wanted to be the first ones to do it. And we had no idea it was going to grow the way it did. Here we are now, and we're still willing to accept that, you know, and take that responsibility. And really, through the Occupy Peoria pages, we haven't tried to be leaders whatsoever. We've created the pages. You know, we'll post meeting times, things like that, but we really let the people run the pages. And the conversations go on, and there's not a whole lot of arguing or anything like that on the pages. You know, everybody expresses their opinions. So it's really worked out well. And between the pages that we set up and the pages that Bradley set up, they really, you know, had a really diverse group of people.
Matt then found out about the Bradley Action Committee, a student-led group on Bradley campus that was making students more aware about Occupy Wall Street and getting them involved with a possible Occupy Peoria. Matt contacted the admins of the groups and showed solidarity with them.
Pretty much once we found out that both groups existed, which was all about the same time all this was going on, we openly said, hey, you know, we contacted them, we messaged them, I spoke to some of the admins, and we said, you know, we need to work together on this. And so the whole time, the entire time, we've been trying to work together the best we could with both groups, because it is in solidarity, you know, so we definitely wanted to work with them. You know, after talking, saying, hey, you know, I may be a Ron Paul supporter, you could be a Barack Obama supporter, it doesn't matter. I have no problem standing next to you at a protest, protesting, getting corporations out of politics. We're all here for the same reason, to get corporations out of politics. You know, I mean, everything's so messed up, from the Federal Reserve buying off corporations, to corporations buying off politicians, politicians voting for the corporations, a huge mess. Our founding fathers warned us against this, and everybody sees it. And if we can all stand together, then that's something that the mainstream media and the establishment do not want to see. And they cannot, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to fight against people united. And that's what you're seeing is people united.
The Bradley Action Committee was started by a few Bradley students, David Kokolich, Alejandra Lopez, Maribel Mendez, Jasmine Garcia, Colleen Denzel, and Andrew Engelbrecht, who were all students that were concerned about other Bradley students on campus and how uninvolved they were with politics. David had created the Facebook page for Bradley Action Committee that was going to deal with Occupy Peoria. David, like Matt, felt that something needed to be done after seeing what was happening in Occupy Wall Street.
We really need to, like, do something. Like, someone needs to do something. And so I just went ahead and made it. And then afterwards, like, when I made it, some people joined, and, like, someone from my team, Rona, was just like, oh, this is great. Let's get some admins and, like, keep it up and, you know, start things going. And I was like, yeah. And then, like, I was asked who wanted to be admins. And, yeah, and afterwards that, like, things started to pick up. And then, like, and then we learned about the Occupy Peoria page. And, and then we had a couple of incidents at the first beginning of it, of just people misunderstanding each other. And, like, after that, we kind of, like, reinforced the idea that this group's for everybody. And then, like, we also saw, like, on the Occupy Peoria page, like, that kind of idea getting almost transcended there, too.
Andrew, before starting the Bradley Action Committee, was involved with Move On when he first found out that Chase had not paid any of their income taxes when protesting in front of their building on tax day. He later would attend meetings of the Greater Peoria Progressive Coalition, which is an organization that promotes communication, cooperation, and mutual support in solidarity with other Peoria progressives in the community of Peoria. Eventually, after attending their meetings, he brought to their attention that the Bradley Action Committee was going to do an Occupy Peoria with Bradley students. Andrew talked about how the Bradley University reacted to this.
Yeah, from what I've talked to, it's all been support. I talked to President Glaser before this, not involved with what we're organizing here. But as far as, you know, wanting people to get politically active, she's all for that. I talked to the head of the activity organization or whoever's in charge of activities at Bradley, and she's all behind us and, you know, wants us to, you know, do events and, you know, just didn't work with the homecoming weekend. We couldn't really do anything this past Saturday. But as far as future events, you know, just got to either get behind another organization or create our own, and, you know, we'll be all good to go.
By now, people were sort of finding that there were others doing something in regards to Occupy Peoria, but were not sure what their intentions were. So a meeting was held among these individuals, about 26 people, who were from groups and some who were not affiliated with anything at all. But everyone that was there to represent just themselves. I attended this Occupy Peoria planning meeting and it was tense and awkward. We met at the downtown library and stood in a circle in one of the lounge rooms, which the library probably wasn't too happy about. Some of those on the left were very angry that Matthew wore a Ron Paul shirt to the meeting, though it wasn't planned that way, since he had just come from a Campaign for Liberty meeting. But as things started to calm down, we focused on voicing our frustrations and telling our ideas of what we wanted to fix in this country, in our community. When we finished, we realized that there were some common goals that we had. So after some worries about if individuals within the group were trying to co-opt Occupy Peoria with Move On and the Democrats or the Libertarians with Ron Paul, another meeting was held. The second Occupy Peoria planning meeting was a lot more calm. People there apologized how they had acted at the first meeting, and we focused more on the agendas at hand. The local media caught wind of this and reported the meeting.
The rally, another Occupy group, met tonight on the Peoria Riverfront. They're taking their message to the Peoria streets on Saturday. The march is planned to start at the corner of Main and University by Bradley, and then down around corporations like Chase Bank and onto the Peoria Riverfront. The group is just forming, but everyone says it's something in the nation that needs to change.
The odd thing about this was that it was only a planning meeting. There's a lot of times where the news will not even bother covering protests. And if they do, they don't get the wording right. But at the meeting, many of us apologized for remarks that were made at the previous meeting and in between. Then we started deciding on the route for October 15th, which was the Global Day of Action, in solidarity with Occupy Wall Street. By the end, it was decided that the route would go from Main and University to the Federal Courthouse, to City Hall, then to the County Courthouse, to Caterpillar Headquarters, down to the Gateway Center on the riverfront, and then finish the march off at Liberty Plaza, where we would hold our first General Assembly. When Saturday arrived, it was very windy out, but the weather was about perfect. Don Nessery, who was loosely affiliated with Move On and a member of Greater Peoria Progressive Coalition, had a banner laid out on the ground in Campus Town with the words Occupy Peoria sketched in pencil. As people started to show up, we picked up paintbrushes and filled the letters in red. By 11:30 a.m., when the paint was almost dry, there were already 50-plus people. By noon, there were over 100. The whole corner of Main and University on Campus Town was covered, and soon there was 200-plus people. I spoke to one of the protesters, Dan Dugal, why he was down there that day while the wind whipped through us.
I'm down here because, you know, something's very wrong in this country. And I think there's a lot of people who feel that way. And I'm just adding my voice to a number of people, thousands of people across the nation and today even across the world who want a better planet for the people. I mean, it really starts with, you know, an admission that something is wrong. When our Congress, you know, especially at the national level and even to a lesser degree here at the local level, it's been bought. It's corrupt. It's been hijacked. So we need to get the money out of Washington and return the government to the power of the people.
I also talked to Scott Wilson, a foreman for a landscaping company who was protesting more than just Wall Street, which he felt was also part of the problem in this country.
To me, the most important thing is exposing the corruption on all levels. You know, I mean, this isn't just about Wall Street. This is about, you know, it's about oil companies. It's about banks. It's about wars. It's about 9/11 truth. It's about, you know, so many different things to me. There's corruption on all different levels. I believe that people need to be removed from office. I think a new system has to come in where, you know, we take money out of politics. We take, you know, we don't allow lobbyists. We don't allow, you know, wars to be fought on, you know, in our name, on our dollar, you know, trillions of dollars in secret loans. You know, there's a whole lot of truth that people don't follow because the media doesn't cover it.
I also talked to Justin Abatey, who was down there as a conservative, and I asked him why he was protesting with other liberals, socialists, and Democrats.
And I came down here to support the Occupy movement that's going on all over the nation and to show my solidarity for those in New York who are really at the heart of the beast there with Wall Street and and the New York branch of the Federal Reserve. And I just wanted to show my support for what those guys are doing. And I wanted to come down especially because I felt like it was important to show that conservatives like myself are in support of stopping corporate control over our government and stopping the rampant greed on Wall Street that has destroyed prosperity in our nation. And I think that a lot of times this whole movement gets skewed in the eye of the public as if it is class warfare, you know, the lower class against the middle class, when that's not the case at all. It needs to be portrayed for what it should be, all of us together against the establishment status quo.
I also spoke to a protester named Richard Reeves. He talked about how everyone, though with different ideologies, was able to come together down there and why it was important for people to do this.
A lot of us are complaining about the same stuff. We're just using different languages, different phrases to complain about it. And I think we need to understand that we're all talking about the same problem. We're just looking at it from a different angle. And because the oligarchy or the elite or the top 1% or whatever you want to call them, they control the dialogue. And they have convinced the rest of us that half of us hate the other half. And they try to label this movement is associated with that political party, and therefore the other political party and all the other movements that they've associated with it must oppose them. We shouldn't be opposing each other. These are all the same things. These are all the same complaints. Are all this the same? It's the same problems that are persistent in this, and it's been going on in this country for over 100 years.
Then, when the march started at 1 p.m. some of us went to Bradley and others towards downtown, but we quickly regrouped soon after and made our way towards the federal courthouse. I spoke to Tim Buckingham, another protester, who was carrying a guitar along the way, and asked him why he was down there to protest for Occupy Peoria.
Because I think what's going on right now with the way the wealthy class in this country is taking advantage of the lower classes in this country is probably the worst problem we have going today. The problem with money in politics and the way corporations are allowed to use money in politics is like the biggest roadblock we have to getting anything positive done in this country. And right now is probably the most crucial time in our nation's history as to whether we're going to move forward in a good way or a bad way.
About 170 people marched along down Main Street as cars passed by and honked to show support. We first went to the federal courthouse and had our pictures taken with the Occupy Peoria banner, then moved towards City Hall and had more pictures taken, before going to the county courthouse and encircling Abe Lincoln's statue and chanting. Then we made it to Caterpillar and started shouting up at the building.
Hey, hey, Caterpillar, we're the 99%! Hey, hey, Caterpillar, we're the 99%! Hey, hey, Caterpillar, we're the 99%! Hey, hey, Caterpillar, we're the 99%!
After taking pictures and chanting in front of Cat, we went to the Gateway building, marched along the riverfront, and found ourselves at Liberty Plaza, where our first General Assembly would be held. 100 or so people gathered and sat on the steps facing the pavilion. Don Necessary said the first words to the General Assembly.
Invite everyone to stay as long as you like today. We want to conduct, though, right now. The People's Assembly. Where we decide where. What?
What?
And when?
And when?
We do next. So,
David, with the Bradley Action Committee, spoke up about getting students on the campus more active.
Should work together with the school. And the students that are here that are from Bradley.
To wake up our fellow Bradley students.
To the events that are happening in our world. To build a movement on Bradley's campus.
Woo!
Then Dan Dugal stood up and read the Declaration of Occupy Wall Street, which was a list of its objectives and complaints.
As we gather together, in solidarity, to express a feeling of mass injustice,
we must not lose sight
of what brought us together.
We write so that all people
who feel wronged by the corporate forces
of the world can know
that we are your allies.
As one people united,
we acknowledge the reality
that the future of the human race
requires the cooperation
of its members.
That our system must protect our rights.
And upon corruption of that system,
it is up to the individuals
to protect their own rights
and those of their neighbors
that a democratic government derives
its just power from the people.
But corporations do not seek consent
to extract wealth from the people
and the earth,
and that no true democracy
is attainable when the process
is determined by economic power.
We come to you at a time
when corporations,
which place profit over people,
self-interest over justice,
and oppression over equality,
run our governments.
We have peacefully assembled
here, as is our right,
to let these facts be known.
They have taken our houses
through an illegal foreclosure process,
despite not having the original mortgage.
They have taken bailouts from the taxpayers
with impunity,
and continue to give executives
exorbitant bonuses.
As the General Assembly was adjourned, one man stood up and spoke out loud to let people remember one thing before they left there.
In honor of our American civil disobedience, in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, first they ignore you. Then they mock you. Then they fight you.
Then you win.
It was surprising to be down there Saturday among other Peorians, something I had never seen before in my life, living and growing up in Washington and Peoria, and being politically active these past 4 or 5 years. It was fairly moving to see everyone come together and talk to one another, even if their ideologies were different. But I feel that the movement itself across this nation will keep going, and that it must keep going if we have any chance of making any real change here in Peoria and this country and in the world.
Or you stand on the wrong side of history. Either you obstruct in the only form left to us, which is through civil disobedience, the plundering by the criminal class on Wall Street, and accelerated destruction of the ecosystem that sustains the human species, or you become a passive enabler of a monstrous evil. Either you taste, feel, and smell the intoxication of freedom and revolt, or sink into the miasma of despair and apathy. Either you are a rebel or a slave. Yeah. to be declared innocent in a country where the rule of law means nothing, where we have undergone a corporate coup, where the poor and working men and women are reduced to joblessness and hunger, where war, financial speculation, and internal surveillance are the only real business of the state, where even habeas corpus no longer exists, where you as a citizen are nothing more than a commodity to corporate systems of power, one to be used and discarded, is to be complicit in this radical evil. To stand on the sidelines and say, I am innocent, is to bear the mark of Cain. It is to do nothing to reach out to help the weak, the oppressed, and the suffering, to save the planet, to be innocent in times like these is to be a criminal. Ask the environmental activist Tim DeChristopher. Now in prison. Choose. But choose fast. The state and the corporate forces are determined to crush this. They are not going to wait for you. They are terrified this will spread as it is spreading. They have their long phalanxes of police on motorcycles, their rows of white paddy wagons, their foot soldiers hunting for you on the streets with pepper spray and orange plastic nets.
And detention camp!
They have their metal barricades set up on every single street leading into the financial district in New York, where the Mandarins and Brooks Brothers suits use your money, money they stole from you, to gamble and speculate and gorge themselves, while one in four children outside those barricades depend on food stamps to eat. Speculation in the 17th century was a crime. Speculators were hanged. Today they run the state and financial markets. They disseminate the lies that pollute our airwaves. They know, even better than you or I, how pervasive the corruption and theft has become, how game the system is against you, how corporations have cemented into place a thin oligarchic class and an obsequious cadre of politicians, including Barack Obama, judges, and journalists who live in their little gated Versailles, while 6 million Americans are thrown out of their homes, a number soon to rise to 10 million, where 1 million people a year go bankrupt because they cannot pay their medical bills, and 45,000 die from lack of proper care, where real joblessness is spiraling to over 20%, where the citizenry, including students, spend lives toiling in debt peonage, working dead-end jobs when they have a job, a world devoid of hope, a world of masters and serfs. The only word these corporations know is more. Those on the streets around Wall Street and here tonight are the physical embodiment of hope. You know that hope has a cost, that it is not easy or comfortable, that it requires self-sacrifice and discomfort, and finally faith. And those who hope sleep on cement every night, and their clothes are soiled, and they have eaten more bagels and peanut butter than they ever thought possible, and they have tasted fear, been beaten, gone to jail, been blinded by pepper spray, cried, hugged each other, laughed, sung, talked too long in general assemblies, seen their chance drift upwards to the office towers above them, and wondered if it is worth it, if anyone cares, if they will win. But as long as we remain steadfast, we can see our way out of the corporate labyrinth. This is what it means to be alive. And you tonight, and those in New York, and Philadelphia, and Los Angeles, and Boston, and dozens of other cities across this country are the best among us.
Thanks for tuning into Solidarity Journal. I'd like to also thank Razia Ahmed for editing the segment on Pakistan's floodings. And I'd also like to thank the people of Peoria for coming out Saturday and showing their support for the Occupy Peoria March, Rally, and General Assembly. And hopefully from here, wherever it may go to, is that on Saturday, you showed that you were fed up, you were tired of the system, the corporate elites, the financial institutions, the Federal Reserve, White House, and Congress for taking this system and destroying it and leaving us with our hands open for help. It was moving to be there Saturday to witness it, and I thank you, Peoria, for proving me wrong that we're not all apathetic and that we do care and that we do have common goals that we strive for and will struggle for. Just remember to tune in every Tuesday, 6 a.m. 2 p.m. to hear Solidarity Journal, or check out our archives at radioforall.net. So until next time, keep up the resistance.